Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
Good morning, Memphis. This is Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN. We have a big show for you today. Jeffrey, this morning I'm going to start the Indiana Pacers apology tour.
Because it's big of you.
Yeah.
It's big.
Well, we'll get into that in just a second. Obviously, really important and, to me, shocking result in Game 3. Pacers take down the Thunder 116-107, so we'll talk about that. I haven't had the chance to address the Zach Edey stuff on the radio yet, so we'll talk about that at 9:30. At 10 o'clock, we will talk to my colleague, Chris Harrington. Chris, by the way, has a piece out about value center options that the Grizzlies could look at in free agency.
Bargain bin hunting?
We'll go through some of the names. I have a feeling it's going to be hard to get people excited about some of the names on the list, but we will go through.
We'll do our best.
Some of the names on that list, and then Writer Than Right trivia at 10:30. The prize today: 2 tickets to Outlaw Festival at Radiance Amphitheater, June 27th. Plus,
so that's the big names, y'all. That's Willie Nelson and family. Bob Dylan. We got Nate Ratliff and the Night Sweats. Big concert there.
So you will get tickets to that, plus tickets to Crosstown Clash live wrestling night at Crosstown
and
Brewery.
Now it's going to be a triple prize. Drew, I told you, I thought it was just a double prize, but now it's going to be a triple prize because Kevin has just texted me that we will also be throwing in 2 tickets to the big children's event after the big children's museum event. It's 90s edition, the after hours. It will be tomorrow night, Friday night. It is a fun 90s-themed night of beer, wine, and small bites. You'll also get to flashback to your childhood memories as Cerrito Trivia will test your knowledge of pop culture from the 90s. It's all at the Children's Museum. Great event. Excited about that as well.
So an adult event at the Children's
Correct.
Museum.
Exactly. After hours.
After hours.
There you go.
There you go. I've heard the Children's Museum is great, by the way.
It's one of my favorites. And, like, obviously, since my heyday, it's been expanded, whatnot. It's fantastic. It is pretty steep in the wallet.
As someone with a daughter on the way, I'll have to be checking out the Children's Museum here pretty soon. Anyway, back to the finals here. I've already gotten a few messages because I said on our podcast yesterday I thought the Thunder were still going to win it in 5 games, that they were going to take 3 in a row. And I have to admit, watching the game last night, I feel differently about the Pacers now than I did before Game 3. I also don't feel all that differently about the Thunder. I still think that if you want to give the Thunder credit for being a juggernaut in the regular season, there's a reason they were a massive favorite in this series, right? It's
Absolutely.
Because they're extremely talented. Their defense is incredible.
Very deep.
Very deep. They're not going anywhere. They're going to be able to bring this roster back. I think there were a lot of reasons why, and that takes all of the bias out of this, right? The Thunder were priced as huge favorites coming into this series, and I don't think any of that changes. Just because the Pacers have proved that stylistically they can match what the Thunder did this season doesn't make me feel any different about the level in which the Thunder are capable of playing. I don't think that this has changed my opinion on the Thunder as much as it's changed my opinion on the Pacers. And so, inevitably, when you're wrong about something, people like to point it out. And that's just natural. Like, I don't blame anybody for it. This is something that I was wrong about. I didn't think the Pacers were going to be competitive in this series at all. Clearly now, the Pacers have a better than 50% chance of winning this series, if you go look at the analytics. But it's just natural to sort of want to point out when things are not right or are wrong. And it's funny, though, like as somebody, as I just mentioned, Jeffrey, who's going to become a new dad, you realize that that's in human nature very early. If I asked you, let me put it this way. If you were trying to get your, how old is your daughter now?
She'll be 2 in August.
Okay, so is she doing colors and numbers and that sort of thing yet?
Yeah, a lot of like recognition stuff.
Yeah. So if you were to play the color game with your daughter and you were to say, hey, what is the color of that sign right there? And it's a stop sign. She might say red. Or what is the color of this table? It's brown. What's the color of this pen? It's blue. You know, she might be able to do that for a little bit, but then the interest will go away and she won't want to play the color game anymore.
Yeah, so you might get 3 questions in.
You might get 3 in.
Yep.
But I'd be willing to bet you, Jeffrey, if you held up a blue pen and you said, this pen is red.
No, Daddy.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's how you know from a very young age, it's just natural human nature to love to point out when people are wrong. And I was very wrong about this Pacers team. I was really happy last night because of all the things I've got going on in life at this moment. I haven't had a chance to really sit down and watch basketball games the way that I watch Grizzlies basketball games. And, you know, during a Grizzlies game, I might fire off a few tweets. A lot of it are score updates, whatever, if people aren't able to watch the game.
Yeah.
But I don't fire off every thought that comes to my head. But I do write those thoughts down as the game goes. And so last night, I spent the time to sit down, watch the full game, and write down as many thoughts as I could. Just everything that sort of began to pop into my head as this game
emptied
went
the
along.
Notebook.
Emptied the notebook.
Oh yeah.
So I've got a few things here. The first thing I wrote down, it felt like you knew that was going to be a close game or at least a good game in the first 5 minutes. And it had nothing to do with the fact that the Pacers looked game. To me, I knew that that was going to be a close game because of the way it was officiated in the first 5 minutes. They called the fouls. It is such an advantage to OKC if they let them play because OKC fouls so dang much. It's actually a frustration of mine, and it's why I haven't enjoyed watching the Thunder, is I feel like they get away with fouling a lot. And the officials called that game tightly. I'm not saying that officials even did a good job. I'm just saying the way that they did officiate the game, especially early, it's set up to have this game be close going the rest of the way. So that was something that immediately I sort of noticed. The other thing, I watched the Pacers and to some degree the Thunder, and I think about the way that they play, and it just feels different than the finals that you may watch, I don't know, 8 to 10 years ago. Because, you correct me if I'm wrong, I know that this Heat team lost to the Mavericks, but back in that era, it felt like teams were focused on getting the highest number of extremely high quality players, the stars.
Yeah.
And that was the strategy across the league. And now you watch teams like the Pacers and to some degree the Thunder, although the Thunder really do have a big three, but you watch a team like the Pacers and it's almost as if this league has moved in the direction of quantity of above average players. It's not even having the three best players. It's about who can put the most playable players on the court over the course of an NBA playoff series. And to me, this has been an amazing example of this, is watching the Pacers and the way that they play. They don't put bad players on the court, ever. There's never a player that you feel like is a major liability when they're out there. The Thunder are the exact same way. So I'm curious, Jeffrey, do you subscribe to this idea that an NBA team is only as good as the worst player that they put out on the court at any given time?
Yeah, I don't know if I would phrase it like that. I do think we've gotten into the era. We've gotten away. I think with this CBA, the idea that you just get the three best players you can and then backfill it, I think that's no longer successful. Because what happens, to your point, is, okay, those three guys may be great, but the odds of all three of them being unstoppable in the same game is highly unlikely. Also, what we're seeing is the odds of you keeping them healthy is highly unlikely. That's not just a Grizzlies problem. We're seeing that throughout the league. So then it becomes all right, everything is now, like, clearly they hunt particular matchups. Like, both sides hunt particular matchups. And if you have a weak link on the floor, particularly on the defensive end, that person just gets exposed and there's no way to get around it. And so when you have all this money basically tied up into three players, that means that a lot of basically the rest of your rotation guys, maybe you have a mid-level exception, but a lot of those guys are either on cheap rookie deals and they're inexperienced and, like, there's a reason why you don't quote unquote win with young guys, or they're guys that are, like, on veteran minimums. And so the quality of depth seems to be a bigger factor. Like, even with Boston last year, granted, I kind of put Boston into a different category because they had an owner that basically said, we don't really care about any of the financial rules. But if you look at, even if you wanted to say last year, I think Luka's the best player in the series, Boston then had, like, the next eight. And so, like, that's kind of, I think, the theme that we're going to see developing.
Yeah. It's interesting to look at the Pacers, too, because the Pacers, if you were to match the Pacers with the Grizzlies, we had talked about this going into the conference finals, that Indiana sort of looked more like Memphis than any of the other teams that had made it that far. At least positionally, with the point guard, Halliburton, Ja, the power forward, Siakam, Jackson. And then beyond that, though, the Pacers just have a bunch of above average players, of players who are capable of giving you a good performance in any given playoff game. But I don't think anybody that truly stands out on a night-to-night basis as the third star, sort of the way that Desmond Bane is viewed for the Memphis Grizzlies. And it's fascinating to think about this, because everybody really wants the Grizzlies to go out this summer. They want them to add veterans. They want to put more play. They want them to match essentially what the Pacers have done, to have as many playable, above-average, experienced players as they possibly can, so that they can be more competitive in a playoff series like this, and so that they can avoid something like the slippage that you saw at the end of last season. But it's the Grizzlies are in a really tough spot, because now if you assume that they're going to have to do the renegotiate and extend with Jaren Jackson, it puts you in a position where you're going to go under the salary cap. You're going to have a room exception, which is roughly $9 million, and then you're going to have to trade in order to, you know, fill the pieces of the roster that you're going to lose. Because, you know, if you do the renegotiate and extend with Jaren, you're going to have to release cap holds on all three of your free agents, on Lamar Stevens, Marvin Bagley, Luke Kennard. It doesn't mean that none of those players can come back, but it just means that you're
it's
not
a lot harder to
you're
bring
not,
back.
Right. You're not counting on them being on the roster. And so I think where people sort of get mixed up, and this is something I've tried to get Chris to explain, and Chris is so great at this, you know, getting in the weeds with all the free agency stuff. But one thing that I think people don't understand is, like, when the Grizzlies go under the salary cap, that means they're able to spend up until they get to the salary cap, not until they get to the luxury tax.
Right.
And so
first
there's not as much space or as much ability to spend in a situation like that as I think many would hope. You're just not going to be able to spend a lot of money without trading assets. And so, yeah, you can use your trade exceptions, and that can get you closer to that first apron than you would have been just trying to sign players. Obviously, you're not going to be able to go over the cap, so you're not going to be able to go far at all over that number. But you also are missing tradable contracts, right?
Yes.
If you have to send out John Conchar or Jay Huff in order to get Jaren signed to an extension, then you lost two of your tradable contracts. That leaves you essentially with Brandon Clark at just over $12 million as a trade option. So if the Grizzlies really want to set themselves up to look more like the Pacers, it's going to take getting really uncomfortable. It's going to take either trading Desmond Bain, which is a big risk because he's one of your best players and one of your most vocal leaders and dependable personalities in the locker room. That would free up a lot of space, over $30 million in salary. Or it's going to take saying, hey, you know what, Jaren? We're going to let you go all the way to free agency next summer, and we'll still be able to pay you more than anyone else.
Offer you the extra year.
We're going to offer you an extra year, but this is just what it's going to take in order to add the number of depth pieces that we need. Because it's not going to be enough, I think, to add just one player or just use your room exception of $9 million and then clap your hands and say, that's good enough. This looks close enough to what we're watching right now. And so I think it's going to be a very uncomfortable decision-making period for the Grizzlies this summer as they try to figure out what they're going to do next, especially if you're comparing it to what the Pacers have and the way that the league is going, where you need it's not good enough to just put three players on the court and say, you know what, we feel like we're going to have three of the best five players available in this series, and that's going to be good enough to win. It just doesn't operate. The league just does not operate that way.
And anymore. Especially, and I know Tuomas adjusted a little bit, but especially when you operate like the Grizzlies do, which is, yeah, you've got those three guys, but you do not play them heavy minutes compared to the rest of the league.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, I do think there's an interesting question here. So if you look at Indiana and you look at their roster, so Pascal and Halliburton are both at $42 million. But then their next highest paid guy is Miles Turner at 19, basically a shade under 20. Like, I do think that's where it becomes interesting is like in – because I set the Thunder aside. Like, the Thunder have the unique advantage that two of their top five guys are on rookie deals. So yep. that gives them a flexibility that most other teams don't have. Like, it doesn't apply to the Grizzlies. Are you better off now in this era of only having two guys at the highest level and then kind of that using to your point, like I'm not saying that means like trade Desmond Bane, but having basically breaking up Desmond Bane's contract and probably to a couple more players.
That would be an option. It would be an option for the Grizzlies. If you're going to say, look, we've got to be able to at all times put nine quality players on the floor all at one, you know, all over the course of a playoff series, you know, that'd be a way to move in that direction. But as we noted, it is certainly a risk. The other thing that I noted down watching the game last night, obviously this game belonged to Benedict Mathurin, who scored 27 points. He was amazing in that game, 4 rebounds, made a ton of shots, didn't even shoot a high number of threes, but still got to that point total. It doesn't really feel like the Grizzlies have a player like that.
I mean, I think
here's.
I would say, like, from a scoring perspective, I think your hope is like, oh, well, that was Kennard, but Kennard's not the defensive guy that Mathurin is.
Or the athlete.
Yeah.
You know? And you might say, look, you know, Santi, certainly capable of scoring 27 points off the bench. Scottie Pippen, we saw him do it in the playoffs. Scottie's a different type of player. Scottie's is more meant to be a player like you watched, like, TJ McConnell last night.
Sure.
Who's a menace on the ball and an engine defensively. Santi is a big. He's a pass, dribble, shoot forward, where Mathurin's a 6'5 guard. I mean, the other player who's been tremendous in this series is Obi Toppin, and he was great last night, too, for the Pacers. had the big dunk late in the game. And it feels like, you know, if you're trying to find a player that can match sort of what the Pacers have, you know, Jalen Wells obviously had an awesome season, and you don't want to discredit what he's done, but he's still only going into his second year. He's obviously going to need some time to become a player like them. It's just part of any player's development. But to me, it just doesn't feel like that when you and Jeff were in here earlier this week talking about how the Grizzlies should approach the offseason in terms of need, whether it's going to be a third ball handler, a wing, a center, especially now given the Edie injury. I think as I watch the finals, to me, it gives me more clarity that the Grizzlies are in need of players like Mathurin and Top. Like, they need athletes on the wing.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is, like, when you talk about it, it's the athletic difference. Like, when you see the Grizzlies, like, they're just not a particularly athletic team.
It's huge. And that gets into my third point here, which is that the Pacers' pace is different than the Grizzlies' pace. Both teams play with pace. Both teams want to play fast. They want to get out and run. Last night, the Pacers had 14 turnovers. It resulted in 14 OKC points. The Grizzlies against the Thunder, offensively, the Grizzlies, 24 turnovers for 24 OKC points in Game 1, 15 turnovers for 25 OKC points in Game 2, 16 turnovers for 21 OKC points in Game 3, 22 turnovers for 32 OKC points in Game 4. And that isn't even the biggest problem. Like, yeah, the Grizzlies have to take care of the ball. Yes, I think in addition to adding athleticism on the wing, it needs to be a priority to at least carry another point guard on the roster, somebody that you can trust with the ball. To me, the difference is that the way that the Pacers play with pace results in easy baskets.
Yep.
The way that the Grizzlies have played with pace, especially late in the season, it didn't result in points.
No, it resulted in balls out of bounds.
Yeah, exactly. How many times did you see the Pacers steal an inbounds pass or pick off a pass and take it for an easy layup?
I would have liked to have seen some of them, but how many times last night were you watching where you looked up and the Pacers had scored again, but they stole the inbound pass, scored, and we never saw it? Like on the broadcast. Yeah. Like, I was like, what happened there?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. It just feels like the way that the Pacers are able to play and utilize their speed is more efficient than the way that the Grizzlies were able to utilize their speed. And this is really the difference. The Pacers forced 19 turnovers last night. They scored 21 points off those turnovers. If you go back to the games the Grizzlies played against OKC, they forced 16 turnovers in Game 1. They only scored 10 points off of those turnovers. They forced 7 turnovers, not nearly enough, Game 2, scored 6 points off those turnovers. They forced 11 turnovers in Game 3, scored 15 points off those turnovers. They forced 8 turnovers in Game 4, scored 9 points off those turnovers. The difference between Indiana and Memphis is that Indiana is capable of getting the easy ones. Memphis not capable of getting the easy ones.
But I think that also goes back to athleticism. Like,
absolutely.
I think a huge part of it is that, like, last night you saw, I mean, how often was Indiana just going full court pressure? And, like, the Grizzlies can't really afford to do that, because if you break the full court pressure, like, they're not athletic enough to recover.
Yeah. That to me was something that really stood out. And I don't think that this is for a lack of the Grizzlies trying. I think that the Grizzlies, ideally coming into the season, when you thought about the way that the team was going to be structured, right? Vince Williams Jr. was supposed to be that type of disruptive, quick hands player that was going to be able to force turnovers and create in transition for the Grizzlies. Marcus Smart was supposed to be that type of player. You know, Jake LaRavia, they traded out. Like, they had maybe not the highest level of those players, but they had players capable of...
They had guys in the mold.
...creating for them. Yeah, they had a reason to believe that that was the type of team that they could be. And that turned out to be the exact opposite of the type of team that they became, which was a team that was more centered offensively than defensively by the end of the year. And to me, that's an athleticism problem. And now, you know, I think part of it is so frustrating because you had players like DeAnthony Melton. You had players like Kyle Anderson. And when you think back, what have, like, I can't tell you the number of times I got to ask the question this season of, like, what happened to that Grizzlies team that we used to watch back in 2021-22, where it was run and gun, it was smiles and laughs, it was alley-oops, and, like, part of that is that they don't have the disruptors on the wing or the athletes to make that possible anymore. And so this offseason...
Well, and the other part of that is, in 22, had Jaren's contract kicked in? I'm trying to...
I think so. I think that was...
I think that was the... And it's also, Jaren's contract was not $38 million. You know what I mean? It was like, whatever, 25, 26. But the biggest difference was Ja and Dez were on...
Yeah, they were able to pay Tyus Jones. They were able to pay DeAnthony Melton. They were able to pay Kyle Anderson. And maybe you're not going to be able to replicate that. Yeah, Steven. Maybe you're not going to be able to replicate that now that all of your big stars are on much more expensive deals. But I think that you could. There is a way that they can go find athletes. There is a trade avenue, albeit uncomfortable, that they can find a way to get back to the way that they played before. But I also wonder if that's the direction that they're going to try to go, given the fact that they hired Tomas Isolo, and we all know he's more of an offensive-minded coach, and he sort of views himself as a pragmatist who is going to alter the way that the team plays or rotations or whatever based on what he's seeing on the court and the way that the team is playing, rather than just say that this is going to be our identity, this is the way we're going to play, and this is the way we're going to do it all season long. So I'll be interested to see what the Grizzlies do, but I think that, for me, was something that absolutely stood out as I watched the game last night. Do you think the Pacers are going to win the series now?
So I still feel like this mirrors the Denver series for the Thunder. But what I do think is obvious is Game 4 is such a massive game in this finals, because if you look at how the Thunder have played in game threes this entire playoffs, it's been some of their worst performances. Like, the Grizzlies are up 29. If Ja doesn't get hurt, they're going to blow them out. Game 3 against the Nuggets was kind of similar to this type game, where they had a lead, lost it, the game goes to overtime, the Nuggets end up, you know, kind of pulling away in overtime. But then game 3 in Minnesota was the worst game maybe they played in the entire playoffs. I think what surprised me the actual most is I knew both teams, quote unquote, had depth. I did not think Indiana's depth was going to outplay the Thunder's depth. And through three games, that's what we've seen. Bench scoring right now through three games, 132-94 in favor of the Pacers. I think that's what has surprised me the most, is because what I was always impressed by and felt like made the Thunder so inevitable was, even if their top guys weren't having massive games, you felt like 6 through 10, those guys could come in and hang, and those guys just have not been very good.
Well, when you talk about getting the easy ones, the Thunder do that better than any team in the league, right? Like, the 100%. Way that they play defense and the way that they disrupt, just and like, honestly, if you go look at, here's what's another thing that's really impressive to me. Indiana shot 33% from three-point range last night. Usually, so if you go look at game one, I think you can say that that win was fluky for Indiana. And maybe that's discrediting the Pacers, and I said this was going to be the Pacers apology tour, and I'm sorry. But I think if you go look at, yes, OKC did that in game one against the Nuggets.
Yep.
But that was mostly an anomaly over the course of the whole season. You don't win 68 games blowing 15-point leads. They held on to almost every 15-point lead. I think they might have blown three 15-point leads.
More times than not, they were extending them.
Right, over the course of the whole season. You didn't think that was going to happen again to the Thunder. And so you thought that the way that the Pacers were going to win games in this series is going to be the way that most teams pick up fluky wins during the regular season. You shoot really well from three-point range. You know, it happens on any given night in the NBA. The Nets beat, I don't know, make the team up, the Knicks or the Celtics, because the Nets shoot 55% from three one night, and that's it. Game over. That's not how the Pacers have played in this series. That's, to me, what's so impressive. And I think, stylistically, the Pacers have found a way to score and not overcomplicate things offensively. Like, one thing I've noticed, and I hope somebody else out there has noticed, and like that this is like somebody else can see it too, but I feel like they're just on repeat offensively. Instead of having the phone on shuffle and shuffling through your plays and all the things that you're doing, it's like they try one action. If it doesn't work, they just go right back to the top and they try it all over again. And to me, by simplifying it, I'm not saying that the offense is simple by any means. I think they've gotten creative with all the other stuff they do, but being simple with what they do on the ball has really helped. And I think that was something the Grizzlies were on the way to figuring out in that OKC series before it just went off the rails with the jaw injury.
Yeah, I think of Indiana's offense as, I think of their offense as like the football offense where they really only have like three run plays, they have three pass plays, like three quick games, then they have, you know, five deep pass plays, and they have some play action stuff, but they run it out of a different look. So like they might be right. running inside yes. zone, but they've moved enough pieces around so it doesn't look like that. Because to your point, it's like, all right, well, if that didn't work, let's reset, let's move somebody over there, and then let's try the action again. And then like oftentimes off that, like you can kind of have like, you know, double moves, if you will, like where you think, okay, he's going to get the ball screen, but really guy fakes the ball screen, goes to the rack. Like they show you similar type actions, but they can run it in a lot of different looks, and then they have adjustments off of it.
Do you believe the Pacers can still win the series if they lose game four?
I do not. I really like. I do think the longer this series goes on, I'm still not convinced that Oklahoma City is going to play this poorly over seven games.
Oklahoma City has not been at their best in the series for sure, because the depth pieces, and like, look, there is to some degree, some of it is youth, right? Like those bench players haven't been in this situation, and Shea hasn't been. I'm not saying he's been bad, but he hasn't been as dominant as you would have expected him to be so far in the series.
Shea's play right now is why oftentimes I just can't stand when the only reason why people say someone's good is just throw a bunch of numbers at me. It's like, yeah, he's still scoring, but he's got the ball in his hand. Like, I expect him to score. Like, in the end, it's, is he making the play that absolutely kills him? I do also wonder this. Do the Thunder have a close game problem? Like, we don't have enough of a sample size.
They haven't played a lot of close games.
Like, that's
the
problem. But when you start to get into these games that are tight, I think like during the regular season, I think they were like 1-4 in games decided by 3 points or fewer. And it does feel like they had the great game in game four against the Timberwolves that was close. They kind of pulled away from Denver in game four in an ugly game. But it's like, I do just wonder, like, when the game gets tight and everybody knows their only offensive option is just Shea making a hero play, it's really tough, man, when you got the length inside, because Shea's not just going to pull up from 35. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to have to go into the lane, and there's a lot of bodies in there.
I also think they're banged up.
Yeah, I just kind of think everyone is.
I think that, well, yeah. I'm not saying that.
Like, I don't think Halliburton looks right.
No, he's not at 100%. Like, I this is a little bit of guesswork and a little bit of what I've heard. I would expect that you're going to hear a couple of different Thunder players having off-season procedures.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. Like, it's the, you know, LeBron afterwards.
Yeah. So
knee sprain, I wouldn't have played.
We will see what happens the rest of the series. We'll get Chris Harrington's thought. Chris, honestly, he said that he thought the Pacers were going to get one of these two. So credit to Chris. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Pacers. I didn't believe in you. I thought that the Thunder were going to run away with it. Turns out I was very wrong. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Zach Edey. We'll go through the list of a few names that might be options to come in and replace him. And then I also have a few thoughts on the draft. This is Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
Welcome back. Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN. We got some news earlier in the week, Jeffrey. We got the update on Zach Edey. The Grizzlies say he had successful surgery. Successful.
Mm-hmm. Always waiting for the first one that said we had marginal surgery.
Yeah. We had all right surgery. Yeah. It went okay.
Fair to middling.
Yeah, he made it out. So Edey had successful surgery. They are going to reevaluate him in 4 months. I think that 4 month mark, that's really when you decide whether or not it was a successful surgery or not. But
or along the way.
Or maybe along the way.
You know what I mean?
Maybe along the way as well. That means that the reevaluation will be taking place right at the start of the regular season, roughly. So it means no summer league for Zach Edey. By now, you probably know all of that. It's been talked about all week at this radio station. There's a couple things here for me that are interesting. One is, you know, everybody wants to know what does that mean? Because every time there's an update like this, there's the reaction to sort of go to the worst case scenario and say, oh, it's going to be January. It's going to be February before we see Zach Edey back. I think in this situation, when they say reevaluate right as the regular season is going to start, if there is, we make fun of like the language that they use, like ramp up and whatnot. If there's a player that's going to need a ramp up before the regular season, I think it's going to be the guy who's huge that's going to be off of his feet almost all summer. I've actually had a very similar ankle procedure myself, my senior year of high school. I was on crutches for 8 weeks. So I would imagine that Zach Edey is not going to be doing a whole lot of anything training-wise this summer, and it's going to take some time for him, once this thing heals, to prepare to play basketball games again. So for me, if he's back by early December, I'm calling it a win.
Yeah, I think that's about right because, I mean, to your point, he's going to have ankle surgery. So it's how much, like, think how long it's going to take him to get in shape.
I know.
And just cardio and whatnot. I actually, when they released the timeline in the sense of reevaluated in 4 months, I actually was like slightly on the optimistic side because I kind of had in my head when the report came out that he's going to miss the beginning of the season. In my mind, I was like, all right, if he plays before January 1, it's a win. And I think there's clearly a path to him playing a decent amount of basketball before January 1. Does it mean happen? No, but...
Yeah, it's certainly possible it could be November.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, look at what happened with Gigi. Obviously, that injury took place a lot closer to the start of the regular
September
season.
I believe. We were looking that up earlier this week.
He was still a month after the reevaluation period, roughly, before he got back out on the court. So, all in all, I think there could have been worse news here. And I did some digging. I asked around about this injury when we learned of it. And, you know, there's occasionally sometimes where a player has a sprain or an injury of that sort, and there's a question whether or not that player is going to have surgery. I mean, we saw it with the Steven Adams stuff, right?
Like, I mean, Brandon Clark.
And Brandon Clark. Now, those are similar injuries, but of different severity.
Sure.
So, like, they didn't feel like Brandon Clark was going to need surgery because the severity was not as bad as Steven Adams. Steven Adams, obviously, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what happened there. Like, obviously, he wasn't going to have surgery and then decided before the regular season was about to begin that surgery was then needed. So whatever they were doing to heal it
or the doctors
wasn't going
at
to
that
work.
Point to say.
So based on what I heard asking around about the Edie situation was that there wasn't much of a question with this one. Like, everybody was kind of on the same page of, like, this has happened one too many times and it's just got to get done. So was the injury pretty? I don't think so. I think that this was serious enough to where they felt the need, and everybody was on the same page from player to organization about, from this is just what I've heard in the background, that this was something that absolutely needed to happen. So I think there's two things with Edie now as we approach the next season. One is, what does it mean for him? And two is, what does it mean for the Grizzlies? So I'll ask you, are you worried at all about what this can do for Zach Edey's, or will do, I should say, for Zach Edey's development, given that this seems to be an important second season? He seemed to have some momentum, and now there's going to be not a lot of basketball played until we're into the middle of the regular season next year.
So in terms of, like, his overall career with the Grizzlies, I'm not worried about it. But I do feel like he's going to lose a summer in which I felt like he had some momentum at the end of the year, despite, you know, getting jerked around, you know, different roles, dealing with injuries and whatnot. Like, I thought he had a pretty good close to the season. Was he a perfect basketball player? No, but, like, I don't ever expect him to be. But there were some, like, really easy things that I thought he could work on this summer. Hands.
Yep.
Finishing at the rim. Like, things that I think playing basketball would have helped him, and now that kind of gets ripped away from him. So in terms of him hitting the ground running whenever he comes back next year, I don't feel great, but at the same time, like, I'm still not – I was probably higher on him than I guess maybe most people were when they drafted him. So I'm not, like, shaken in that capacity, but, like, yeah, I this is a bummer.
I'm not worried about him reaching his potential. I think we're on the same page there. I think it is, well, before I make that point, real quick, here's a few players that also got hurt in and around their rookie season. Biggs.
All right.
Joel Embiid, obviously.
Yep.
That didn't derail his career, although now he's still dealing with injuries.
I think the question is, was that a tell?
He won an MVP.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin,
again,
came back from injury, turned out to be a very good player. Ben Simmons, a little bit different here. Ben Simmons.
But I don't know if it was the injuries that kept Ben from being good.
Right. Like, he came back. He was a productive player after the injuries right around, in and around his rookie year. And Julius Randle, also injured,
yeah,
rookie year. And you know, Chet Holmgren didn't play his whole first season. That's a little bit of a different situation because he just basically got to start a year later.
And they got to get one more draft pick.
But it's not uncommon for young bigs to go through an injury and it doesn't set back their overall potential. I think where this gets tricky, though, is just that it does feel like the Grizzlies are on the clock right now in terms of being competitive and trying to win, because you've got these three stars under contract. You don't know how long your window lasts in the NBA, and it feels like they, at least the way that they speak, feel like the window is open right now. And so you might have a couple years to wait on Zach Edey to reach his full potential, but you don't have forever.
No, and this is also, you know, it's not going to be a lost year on a cheap contract, but it's not going to be a full year on a cheap contract. And I don't know, I guess the only long-term concern I have is something that you can't really worry about because you'll know it when you know it. But like, you don't love having a big with lower leg injuries.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But in terms of like, do I think this injury somehow puts a cap on his ceiling? No, I do not.
No, I don't feel like it does either. And like I said, there's a long list of players that have been examples of guys that got hurt early, came back, still had great careers. So I'm not necessarily too worried about that. The other question is, what does it mean for the Grizzlies?
And that's a bigger one.
And that's probably, as you said, that's the bigger question.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
I think also a lot of this will depend on when he comes back, right? Because if he comes back earlier than December or January, then
let me ask you this.
Have to survive that long.
I almost wonder, before the question of when does he come back, I almost wonder if the first question is what happens with Jaren.
That certainly is a big part of this. Like, everything we've talked about all offseason, almost all of it hinges on what they do with Jaren.
Right. Because that changes what they can and cannot do.
And so it is almost to the point now where I just speak as if they're going to make the maneuvers to extend Jaren. And you're right. Like, there will be much more opportunity for them to maneuver if they either wait and let Jaren go to free agency, or they trade one of the big salaries.
Yep.
Which one is more likely? I think probably letting Jaren go to free agency, but you never know. Like, I you're right. That can impact the way that they can sort of maneuver this ED injury. But also, if you're only having to survive through early November and October, you're just going to do that. Right, that's not a long enough period of time.
here's some minutes.
Well, we'll see. Like, Jay Huff is another player that could be part of the Jaren, could be part of the clearing space to get Jaren an extension. So, it's interesting too. You got Brandon Clark. Like, your depth at center is already challenging. Brandon Clark's going to be coming off of a serious knee injury into a season. They think he's going to be ready to start the season, but he's never been a player that's played over 20 minutes a game. So,
not when he's at his best.
Yeah, and he's certainly a different style of player from Zach Edey. So you start thinking about, you know, what does this mean for the Grizzlies? I think the first thing is the timeline. And Chris Middleton, for example, double ankle surgery. He was in as immediately after the offseason started, so similar range to when Edey had his procedure. He was back in December. But he's a little bit older
yep.
and had two surgeries. So, you know, I think that bodes well for the Grizzlies. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if the Grizzlies are going to try to survive this, I'm curious the way in which they're going to do so. You have a coach, as I mentioned in the last segment, who prides himself on being able to go with the flow and not being too stubborn and changing strategy. And is that something that the team is going to do early in the season? Are they going to play differently and say, well, when Zach Edey comes back, we're going to change it up?
Right. How much of him being a pragmatist last year was a function of he didn't have enough time to get things the way that he wanted? He was given a team, and here it was. And right. It was a flawed team at that point, so he had to make the best of it.
Well, the Grizzlies did not operate in that way over the course of the regular season for 80% of the season, because it wasn't until around the All-Star break that they started incorporating more pick and roll, right?
Yep.
So I'm curious to see the way that the team is going to play. The other thing that they can do is try to go out in free agency and add another center. We will talk to Chris about that at 10 o'clock. He has a list of names, just to read a few. This is in the names that he said were more realistic. Dayron Sharpe, Luke Kornet, Jericho Sims, and then cheaper options, Kevon Looney, Thomas Bryant, Charles Bassey, and Precious Achiuwa. All value options. I'm not sure any of those players play exactly the way Zach Edey plays.
No, you know,
Thomas Bryant might be your closest on that list, or Bassey, potentially.
I think, though, in this scenario, I think this question does specifically apply to what is the timeline of Edey. Because if internally you think, like, hey, man, we're penciling in 30 games that he's going to miss, well, then maybe you're trying to get someone that will model the style of play that you hope when Edey does return, it will just be, all right, everybody knows this is how we play, so it's seamless. The only adjustment is Zach getting his feet wet. But if you're sitting there going, okay, we think realistically, like, he's only going to miss 15 to 20 games, like, it stinks, but we can get through that. I almost wonder if that at that point you're just like, let's just get best available option.
Yes.
And not really care about style of play.
Well, I think if possible, you do want to factor in style of play.
I think the optimal situation is you get someone that does both. But I think in the constraints that we're talking about, like, I don't think there's going to be a perfect fit.
And there's more to balance than just that, too. Like,
100%.
We just talked about it the last segment, about what is the most point, what is the most important need for the Grizzlies this offseason? And there are really three directions. Do you remember what the results of the poll were, by the way? What did people say?
I think it was around 60%. Give me.
Was it wing?
It was wing.
I think that's historically correct. I think that, as we talked about the last segment, the Grizzlies need athletes.
Yeah, I got it right here. 60.3% said a quality wing for the what is the greatest need this offseason. 33.9% said help at center, and only 5.8% said a backup point guard.
So I think that's right. I think that's about right. And I think that sort of reflects the way that the Grizzlies should structure adding players. I think that if I'm the Grizzlies, I'm focused on adding a quality wing. I'm focused on adding size and athleticism on the wing. And I think if you're going to go for a value play, we've talked about how they're very limited in their avenues in which they can add players. If they're going to spend most of the room exception on adding a quality wing, assuming that they do the renegotiate and extend with Jaren again, if they're going to spend their free agency exception on signing a quality wing, that means they're going to have to go bargain shopping on minimum contract bigs. And it may be a real challenge to find a minimum contract big that's going to play the way Zach Edey does, that's going to help you establish a style that you can keep over the whole course of the season. So it does definitely put the Grizzlies in a tough spot. The other thing here that we haven't talked all that much about the draft, but this adds a little bit of intrigue, I think, to the draft, which will take place next week, because the Grizzlies with picks 48 and 56, obviously it's going to be very difficult to predict the direction that they could go if they do the renegotiate and extend with Jaren. That would mean releasing cap holds on players, opening up roster spots. You could see, you know, Yuki's two-way deal done. That'll open up. You could see Cam Spencer move to the main roster. That opens up a two-way spot. And they've made it very clear they're not trying to get younger.
Yeah.
So it feels like the likelihood is,
they said that before, though,
they're not going to try to draft players and immediately add them to the main roster. I would be surprised if that's the direction that they decided to go. Maybe Zach Kleiman feels so confident he's going to hit on a player late in the draft that he's willing to just do that. But to me, it feels like these draft picks are more than likely going to be used on two-way spots or draft and stash players. And they're going to try to leave the other spots open for veteran players. And that's what they should do. But it does feel like the draft is an opportunity to buy a little bit of an insurance policy on the situation with the bigs. Because those are the type of players that are going to be available to you at 48 and 56 are kind of the type of players that you would want as an insurance policy if Zach Edey takes a little bit longer to come back, or if you just wanted to have another big who can play with size behind whoever you might bring in to fill that role temporarily. Just a few names. Jani Broome. Any interest there? I mean, center potential, maybe a little undersized.
Our first thought was, all right, who can they go get in the draft that was a big in college that doesn't most NBA people don't like? It's like, for a short-term fill, okay. But, man, that the
just a two-way. You're only spending a two-way.
Exactly.
You can cycle these players in and out.
Right, and are there some athleticism concerns? Yes, but to your point, this is just not. This is an insurance policy.
This is the insurance policy. Amari Williams, Kentucky. I actually think Amari Williams does have some tools that could be useful at the NBA level. Pretty good passer for that position. Does have some strength and size. The one I think I like the most, Dylan Cardwell, another Auburn player.
Yeah,
real size. Like if you're talking about trying to play the same style as Zach Edey, I think.
He sets some phenomenal screens.
Yeah, you've got a real, I think there's a real pathway to, again, just as an insurance policy.
Talking about the future here.
We're just saying
we're trying to get through a season here.
We're trying to get through a couple months of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, with the Grizzlies track record, you never know. Vlad Golden, may I interest you in Vlad Golden, Jeffrey?
You kind of, when you threw Cardwell out there, because he's also got a lot of junk in that trunk, too, and I like that.
I think that would be an excellent pick as an insurance policy. The last one, Cliff Omorui, the Bama center.
You tell me more.
Real athlete. He set screens.
I feel like in last year's offense, he would have been pretty good.
He's jumping dunk.
Yeah.
He's jumping dunk. A little bit of a different player than Zach Edey. Less post-up, but if you want to play fast and you want to run, I think.
I was going to say, if it would have been for last year's team, I feel like he makes more sense.
Yeah. So, there are options out there for the Grizzlies to try to replace this, and I'm not panicked about what this will mean for Zach Edey long term. I do think, though, that it's going to take some additional navigation for the Grizzlies to get through the first couple months.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.